This is ESPN Radio.
Fourth quarter here on Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Gojo, it seems like we're overdue for Antonio Brown to make some kind of bad headline down in Tampa. Since he's gotten down there, felt like he was going to be a model citizen up until the news that we got today. This, according to Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, Antonio Brown's former live-in chef claims that Antonio Brown sought and secured a fake COVID vaccination card. And Rick Stroud goes on to detail the logistics behind the discovery and his girlfriend, or I guess live-in girlfriend, being involved with that, and some of the receipts that the chef might have as far as Antonio Brown soliciting a fake COVID vaccination card. And so this prompted the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to release a statement regarding the accusations about Antonio Brown's COVID vaccination status. From the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, after an extensive educational process conducted throughout our organization this past offseason, highlighting the benefits of COVID-19 vaccines, we received completed vaccination cards from all Tampa Bay Buccaneers players and submitted the required information to the NFL through the established process in accordance with league policy. All vaccination cards were reviewed by the Buccaneers personnel and no irregularities were observed. Gojo, I'll say this. It sounds like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are punting on the responsibility of whether or not Antonio Brown is actually vaccinated in all of this. That's what it sounds like. This is them checking a box saying, as far as the NFL goes and all their stipulations, we made sure we did our job when it came to making sure that the players could show some kind of proof of vaccination. That's what it sounds like to me. I could be wrong, but I don't think so.
Yeah, this is the Shaggy defense. Hey, it wasn't me. That's all they got right now. And we saw this hot potato method when it happened with the Packers and Aaron Rodgers, right? Like, this isn't new, Chris, and this is now starting to become an interesting trend where the closer and closer we look at this, no one really has a firm handle on what the NFL's process for collecting this information was from players looks like, what is actually required by the NFL for situations like this when it comes to verified vaccine cards, and who's supposed to be really monitoring all this. Because that was one thing that shined through in that Packers situation, is the league was like, hey, the Packers are supposed to be watching this, and mm-hmm. The Packers are basically like, hey, we were watching this, and he's been fine everywhere else. We don't have to prove anything to you. And so it is really undermining any trust any of us are supposed to have in this system. It's like when you're a kid growing up, and you think parents got everything together, and then all of a sudden you are in your 30s, and you realize, oh my God, they've just been trying to throw this thing together like everybody else here. It is a stunning realization we all get to, and I feel like we're having that right now with the NFL's COVID policy.
No doubt about it. And just reading between the lines with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers statement, it's just like, I don't understand how you can say you didn't have any irregularities or all of this was verified by Bucs personnel, when we know for a fact that, according to the Tampa Bay Times, Alex Guerrero was involved in forwarding their head athletic trainer a copy of Antonio Brown's vaccination card, which is believed to be a fake. Like, that's the part that's so crazy to me. Like, how can you punt on this when this is something that you're responsible for? You are the first line of defense when it comes to enforcing the protocols that the NFL has in place for vaccinated and unvaccinated players. And so if the team isn't going to be responsible in terms of verifying that, then at some point the NFL has to step in. Like, at the very least, these accusations by Mr. Ruiz, Antonio Brown's former chef, have to prompt an investigation by the league, because this is starting to become an uncomfortable trend for the NFL, where you're seeing players decide that they're going to buck whatever protocols that have been put in place, that have been agreed upon between the league office and the union.
Yeah, this to me, Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, is interesting. Someone smarter than me is going to have to figure out how you prove Antonio Brown's vaccinated or not in this. Like, we've seen the statement from his lawyer and everyone denying this, saying Antonio Brown is vaccinated, all these different things. Someone smarter than me is going to have to figure that out. But if the answer was he did indeed lie, I feel like we've got a decent chance of the NFL actually doing something here, Chris. We saw the minimal fine for Aaron Rodgers and for Alan Lazard in the case of what happened with the Packers. But I think the difference there was In Aaron Rodgers' case, he lied to the media. He lied to the public. I don't really get why the NFL would care all that much about that. In this case, if Antonio Brown submitted a false vaccination card, he would have lied to his bosses. And the NFL generally doesn't take kindly to that stuff, I feel like. And so it would be a lot more for them to be actually able to punish than there was in Aaron Rodgers' case.
Would it, though? That's the part of this. Like the NFL said, like, as long as, like, we consider, like, an offense when we actually acknowledge that you're doing something that's wrong, and then we're going to fine you according to the schedule. And when Aaron Rodgers' situation, they ultimately ended up fining him for going to the party and being unvaccinated and being around more than three or four other players. Like, that was the part of the rule that Aaron Rodgers broke in the league's eyes. They didn't get him for going into the auditorium with no mask on addressing the media. So I'm curious as to how they would handle this and really how you could differentiate between the two circumstances. I get where you're coming from in terms of misleading the Bucs organization, but ultimately it ends up being, okay, this is the first violation of the protocol, and this should result in the corresponding fine, which is the, what, $14,600 they fine Aaron Rodgers and Alan Lazard? So I don't know, man. This is one of those situations. I guess it's nuanced, and it isn't right what Antonio Brown did, and he should be criticized for it. But I don't know from a discipline standpoint if the NFL hadn't boxed themselves in the corner with how they handled the Aaron Rodgers situation.
I still think this is just different because with Aaron Rodgers, the reason we found out is because when he tested positive for COVID-19, he then had to abide by the rules for an unvaccinated player. So that's how we all found out. But they were all going about this day to day. Antonio Brown did test positive for COVID-19 back in September of this season. And when it came out, Bruce Arians said it was him and Kevin Minter, who was also on the team, one of their linebackers. He said, Kevin and AB are both on the COVID list. With AB, we've got plenty of tries with a proven track record at that position. Kevin will be missed. He said both Minter and Brown technically still had a chance to play Sunday in that instance because it was assumed then they were vaccinated. Like, we found out this Aaron Rodgers thing because we matched up timelines based on the protocol for an unvaccinated player and the protocol for a vaccinated player. So that feels like something that you would have grounds to punish on, Chris, because that is talking about actually exposing people to this risk outside of the one very public instance we saw from Aaron.
Yeah, I guess where you're coming from is the competitive advantage that AB would have with being able to come back after a positive test quicker than what Aaron Rodgers would have been able to come back with because of his positive test and knowing that he was an unvaccinated player. So I get where you're coming from with that.
Oh, but Chris, it's not even the competitive advantage. It's just the fact that one person lied to the people who needed to know that information and the other didn't.
And that's a fair point. I guess I still don't understand how the NFL would be able to parse between those two situations. I guess from my standpoint, it's like Antonio Brown misled the NFL. He misled the Buccaneers. Aaron Rodgers misled the media. He also misled the NFL because the NFL was left to presume that Aaron Rodgers was a vaccinated player if he was showing up to the auditorium to address the media without a mask on. He applied for the exemption, and he didn't get granted access. So I guess they were looking at the Green Bay Packers as the first line of defense to enforce the rules, the same way that the NFL in this instance would probably be looking at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to enforce the rules. So I don't necessarily know where they go with this one, but it just seems like it would be tough to have a different level of discipline with AB than you did with A-Rod.
Well, and I think, Chris, why I maintain the situations are different in a major way, you might be right in their ability to not do much. I saw this from Lindsey Jones, senior writer over at The Athletic, who said, just did another read of the NFL and NFLPA's 99-page COVID protocol document. And the specific language about providing proof of vaccination is for media and league/union staff who might visit a facility, nothing about how a player actually provides proof. This is, once again, it could be a situation where the NFL didn't necessarily have their ducks in a row here and makes this go away pretty quietly. Like, that could be where we wind up again. Now, on this front, we mentioned one of the players that had recently tested positive and was fined in the Green Bay Packers organization. That was wide receiver Alan Lazard. There'll be an interview with him airing on Spain and Fitz coming up tonight at 8 o'clock Eastern that you can check out there. But coming up next, as we head towards tonight, we've also got Thursday Night Football, and we will go and figure out just how much leeway we are going to start to see Mac Jones given under center for the Patriots next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Radio, Mike Golic Jr., Chris Candy. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Gojo, we're going to go there in a second. But first, we got to get an update from you on this Antonio Brown situation with the fake vaccinated card.
Yeah, we were just talking about what's at stake with all of this relative to Bucks wide receiver Antonio Brown, who is being accused of acquiring a fake vaccination card by a former live-in chef who he owes money to. So keep all of that in mind in all of this. But if he were to, according to Adam Schefter, any attempt by team personnel or players to use a forged or fake vaccination card would be reviewed under the NFL's personal conduct policy, which we kind of talked about. But it would also be a federal criminal offense. So again, I don't know how you go about verifying these things, but if you do and you are proven to have gone awry here, there are more issues than just what the NFL wants to do with you. So that's what we got on here, Chris. We've got that going on in Tampa Bay. We have got football going on tonight with the Patriots and the Falcons. And for more on that game, we head to the Goodyear Hotline to talk to ESPN New England Patriots reporter Mike Reese, who joins us now. And Mike, all eyes certainly been on Mac Jones as of late here. As far as the reviews internally from the rookie quarterback of the Patriots, what are you hearing about Mac Jones around the facility?
Well, good evening, guys. My eyes are actually on Mac Jones. I'm here at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I'm watching him warm up on the field as we speak here as the anticipation rises leading into kickoff. And, I mean, this is unbelievable. They feel like it's the perfect match for Mac Jones, Bill Belichick, and the Patriots. And Matthew Slater, the longtime captain, the team's longest tenured player, said this week he is just amazed at how fast Mac has not just picked up their offense and is sort of leading the offense, but how he sort of picked up their culture and the way they do things. And that's very unusual for a rookie. So all positive reviews from coaches, players, when it comes to Mac Jones.
Mike, in looking at this defense for the New England Patriots, I can't help but think about the parallels between them and the 2001 Patriots early in Brady's tenure as a starting quarterback. Just looking at it from a personnel standpoint, there are a lot of similarities with the strengths at the different position groups. And I got to ask, internally, are they talking about the defense potentially being the catalyst for where this team can go, and what are the expectations for this team and for this defense for the rest of the season?
Yeah, it's a really interesting comparison that you make, because if you look at this four-game winning streak that they're on, in a lot of ways it was the defense that really put it together. Pick sixes in back-to-back games, one to help you beat the Chargers on the road, another against the Panthers down in Charlotte. So there are good similarities between the early 2000 Patriots defenses and this one. The only thing I would say to maybe caution ourselves from getting too far ahead of ourselves is look what's ahead for the Patriots. They've won four in a row. They got to take care of tonight. But then after that, you got the Titans coming to town. You got to go to Buffalo on Monday night. You got to go to Indianapolis, a team playing maybe sneaky good football right now. And then you got the Bills coming back to Foxborough, Massachusetts. So that four-game stretch, to me, if they get through that and they're still playing at the level that we've seen in recent weeks, then I would say we're all aboard that thought process with the defense.
Mike, we know the defense been great, the offensive line been great in front of Mac, and the game plan has been for him to affect the game in spots that are low risk right now, near the line of scrimmage, short passing game, taking care of their young quarterback. Are there plans as the season goes along for them to try and add more to his plate, especially as the postseason and potentially a run in that postseason starts to become more and more of a reality?
That is such a great point, because if you look at Mac's air yards per attempt, I believe it's like 7.7 average, which is, if you look at all the rookie quarterbacks first, you know, in the league that are playing this year, that's like second lowest, you know? So it sort of shows that they're majoring in a little bit more of the shorter passing game. The best way that I would answer that is they're picking their spot. And if we go to last week's game against the Browns, I would say really for the first time when he threw those three touchdown passes, we did actually see a few more spots going down the field. And they were third down plays. And I think when I saw it, I thought to myself, okay, this is different in these spots. And now the ceiling for the offense can be a little bit higher than maybe had been anticipated up to that point.
Mike, I got to ask you a couple of questions on the injury front, personnel-wise. Damian Harris, the concussion, what's his status? And then on the defensive side of the ball with the linebackers, Josh Uche and Chase Winovich, what can you tell us about those guys and what their availability is going to be moving forward?
Damian, running back, I watched him walk across the field. He's actually warming up right now. He is expected to play tonight and really assume his regular role as the top running back. They also have Ramondre Stevenson, an impressive rookie. So look for them to sort of split some carries. And then when they're in passing situations, Brandon Bolden would come in. And on defense, it's really a one-for-one switch. They put Josh Uche, a designated pass rusher, on injured reserve, and they bumped up Chase Winovich from injured reserve to sort of take his spot. Chase does a little bit more on special teams, so there could be some thought process there that Chase will help him on fourth down as well.
Awesome stuff, Mike. We're looking forward to the game tonight. Thank you for the insight and the updates. And as this Patriots team continues their march towards what looks like the postseason, I'm sure we'll talk to you soon.
Look forward to it, guys. Have a great rest of the show.
Awesome stuff there. You can check out more at Mike Reese on Twitter as the Pats get ready to play down there against the Atlanta Falcons coming up tonight. But coming up next, Mac Jones, currently a rookie. No rookie quarterback has ever taken his team to a Super Bowl. We found someone to say it with their chest, and we'll let you know who that is next after we tell you about Man in the Arena. Now, check this out. Join host Gotham Chopra as he explores what Tom Brady has meant to football and the world in Man in the Arena. The world. It's a lot. It's a new podcast from ESPN Plus and the Religion of Sports. The world. It's a companion piece to Gotham's ESPN Plus docuseries. The 10-Parts podcast examines the improbable ripple effects of Brady's career. Things that have forced us to rethink everything we thought we knew about time, hatred, perfection, even fate. Fate! It's deep. This podcast is brought to you by State Farm, ZipRecruiter, and Rocket Mortgage. Listen and follow Man in the Arena now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And stream the docuseries on ESPN+. Back after this, it's Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, and Gojo. Yesterday we had Shefty on the show, and one of his responses inspired the guys behind the glass to come up with a new segment that we'd like to call You Tell Me. Wanted to ask you from your perspective, who is this game more important to?
To me, it's important. But I don't. What? Who's it more important to you, Chris? You should tell me.
I love Shefty just full on Stugatzing his way through that moment. Heady play, Adam. Heady play. All right, you tell me. We had a bunch of people willing to go out here and say it with their chest on a couple of takes here. So, Chris, I just want to lob these up. See what you have to say about these. These are some of the ones we've seen already through the course of this week. This first quote comes from Jay Glazer over at Fox. He says, quote, I think the Cleveland Browns are going to look at all the QB options that are available this offseason. They're a winning football team with Baker Mayfield, though. Chris, you buying that idea that Baker Mayfield and the Browns not exactly set in stone this offseason?
No, I'm not buying that idea. And Cleveland might take a look at options on the quarterback market. But guess what, Gojo? If it's a real franchise quarterback, he's probably not going to be available. That's just the reality of it. Franchise quarterbacks typically don't get traded unless they want to force their way out of a current situation. And it's hard to envision a quarterback wanting to force their way to Cleveland, albeit a talented roster. So, yeah, the Browns might look around, but ultimately they're going to land on what we already know. Baker Mayfield is going to be their quarterback in 2022 and probably beyond that, just because there aren't going to be any available options for them to upgrade that position. And for what it'll ultimately end up costing them, Baker Mayfield is going to be locked in as the quarterback for the Cleveland Browns.
Chris, I think more than likely you're right. But I think the sentiment here was something that, and maybe this was more the public than the private, but was largely pushed back on last offseason anytime another quarterback's name got mentioned around the Browns. So I would believe that the Browns are going to do their homework, but ultimately you're probably right. They end up coming back home to the one that got them there to the dance. So let's move on and take a look at this one. No rookie quarterback has ever taken his team to the Super Bowl, so that means the Patriots can't make it to the big game because Mac Jones is their quarterback. Chris, you buying that?
Hell no, I'm not buying that, man. In this amorphous AFC where nobody knows who the best team is, the one team over the course of the last month that has been the most consistent is the New England Patriots. I mean, you can hang your hat on their defense, their running game, that big physical offensive line, and Mac Jones, yes, Mac Jones not making the mistakes that cost you games. Last week, 3 touchdowns, 142 passer rating. Probably the most impressive part, Gojo, is engineering 3 drives of 80-plus yards. That's important when you have a quarterback that can methodically move the ball down the field and then take advantage of the opportunities once they get in the scoring zone. Like, that's a winning formula. So, yeah, I'm sitting there looking at the Man in the Arena documentary and seeing the parallels and personnel from defense that they had in 2001 to what this Patriots defense is marching out there right now. And it's hard for me to think that I just don't know how you could just dismiss the Patriots not having an opportunity to contend at that level. If we're going to sit here and say they're in contention for the AFC East title, knowing that they're in a division with the Buffalo Bills, who was the sexy preseason pick to represent the conference in the Super Bowl, I don't know how you can't say that the New England Patriots have that same ceiling.
Yeah.
I'm just putting it out there.
Chris, the only thing I would say to that is we know the AFC picture is much more about the ineptitude of that side of the NFL than it is anything else, right? Like, we had the top 5 records in the NFL. We're all in the NFC for a while. So that's the only thing that would give me pause in all this is eventually you're going to get to a place where someone is going to be able to stress you with more points. This Patriots defense is really good. They're not the 85 Bears. That's not the world we live in anymore. So that would be my only worry is you start to face more real offense. God forbid the Bills ever really keep this thing going in the right direction. That can make things a little bit difficult here.
They said that in 2001 about the Patriots playing the greatest show on turf, both in the regular season and the postseason.
That is,
just saying.
That is fair. That was an era where we also played with real fullbacks a lot more often. So,
fair point.
A little bit of a different time, but you're right. That greatest show on turf could hum. It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, you tell me. And let's go to this from Bears head coach Matt Nagy on their losing streak. He said, quote, "We lost 6 games in a row with a bye week stuck between. The only way to get back is to say, why is this going on? It's no one's fault other than everybody's fault." That sounds like a convenient thing to say for someone whose fault it probably is.
Exactly. That's what I don't understand. The buck stops with the head coach. Why are you trying to pass blame on anybody else? Matt Nagy, this is all on you. You're the head coach. You're either coaching it or you're letting it happen. Either way, you're responsible for it. So why are you trying to say this is on everybody? It's not on everybody, bruh. This is on you. This team being as awful as they are and having a terrible plan in terms of how you're going to develop Justin Fields and the timeline that you're going to bring him along, like, that is all on the head coach. You can try to put it on Ryan Pace for not having the personnel. You can try to point to the players not executing. But this is on Matt Nagy. It's not on anybody else. It seems like it's a very Adam Gase-ish strategy from the head coach to point at everybody else except himself. And that's the point. That's the problem that I have with this quote. I want to call him Adam Gase. He's Adam Gase to Jace. Matt Nagy, this is on you, bruh. You got to wear it. You got to own it. Your team is 3-6, and it's probably going to ultimately cost you your job.
Adam Gase, a Jace. Boy, that is a – although, listen, very few people are aging better this season than Adam Gase based on the way that we've seen Sam Darnold perform. I'm saying Adam Gase and Kyrie Irving both sitting at home having their reputations slowly improve as a part of their professional, not their decision-making. As time goes along,
Ryan Tannehill is still out there, though.
That is true. Ryan Tannehill stands as the hero in the night for people that want to continue to doubt Adam Gase with good reason. All right, let's go to one more here, Chris, one that I have really loved this week. This is Jets head coach Rob Saleh talking about White Mike, This is Monday of this week, the same week in which Joe Flacco was named the starter for the New York Jets. Rob Saleh said, quote, "What Mike has done in 3 weeks as a starter has proven to this organization and, in my opinion, to the entire New York fan base that he's a capable quarterback who can play in this league. His story is not done being written. He has solidified, in my opinion, his stay here as a Jet." Huh?
Yeah.
What?
I don't understand it. Like, you said this on Monday, but then you made the announcement yesterday that Joe Flacco is going to be your starting quarterback. I don't understand it. It feels like there's an overreaction that's happening within the organization. And to make matters worse, Mike, this might not be Rob Saleh's call. It might be coming from above. So that's the scary part about it, because if the head coach gives this kind of endorsement to the kid and he talks about people not wanting to overreact to just one game in which he throws four interceptions, but then you pull the kid for Joe Flacco, who we know is not a part of your long-term future, it just doesn't make sense. So this is a scary proposition for the head coach making this quote and then the organization making the decision to start Joe Flacco, a guy that doesn't represent any interest in your future, when you have the opportunity to develop Mike White to see if he can become your backup quarterback or to see if he can be an asset that you can flip for draft picks. It just makes sense to let the kid keep playing until Zach Wilson gets healthy. But the part that makes no sense is Joe Flacco being your starter this Sunday against the Dolphins. That doesn't make any sense.
And Chris, what you just mentioned there should send a shiver down any Jets fan's spine. The notion that this organization is back to calling the shots, because what's the one thing everyone's afraid of? Man, it's not too long ago that we looked up and said, man, Jets went out and hired Rob Saleh, coach everybody liked, coach with a pretty stellar track record, coaching defensive football in this league. He was one of the names that everyone wanted a piece of this offseason, and the Jets got him. And now if we find out that this organization's soul-crushing vortex of bad football decision-making is so vast and deep that it can even take him and crush him like a black hole, man, it's going to be some same old Jets talk here sooner than later. So that is, you tell me, honestly, very bleak end to all of that one.
Right, so, right. It just seems really dark.
Yeah, no, it got really dark. So you know what? Coming up next, we are going to try and flip the energy here as we head into Thursday night by talking about an egregious wrong that must be righted as soon as possible. Next on ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Kenny, all guests appeared via the Goodyear Hotline, and we got to give a shout-out to all the guests that came through on the show today. ESPN football analyst Harry Douglas helping us get set for Thursday Night Football, as well as Mike Reese, who is ESPN's New England Patriots reporter. Lewis Riddick coming to give you the straight talk. ESPN NFL analyst, does a great job on Monday Night Football. And then, of course, Stanford Steve from the Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast, getting you set for this upcoming week of football, both in the NFL and college. If you missed any of it, go to the Canty and Golic Jr. podcast. Download, rate, subscribe. We appreciate you for that. But, Gojo, we have reached the portion of our program where it's time for us to go three and out.
Sometimes it's the worst. Sometimes it's the best. Either way, we'll get you straight with everything you need to know. This is three and out.
All right, let's go three and out. And let's start by getting to the money on this one. Because we got some awards getting handed out in Major League Baseball right now. And we're waiting for one. The AL MVP. Getting ready to set to be awarded. And one bookmaker is facing more than $1 million in potential loss on a bet placed back in March that will be decided tonight. On March 19th, a bettor in Nevada placed a $30,000 bet on Angels star Shohei Ohtani to win the AL MVP. He was going off at 30-1 odds at William Hill Sportsbook. And now Ohtani, finalist alongside Blue Jays star Vlad Guerrero Jr. and Marcus Semien, would pay out a nearly $900,000 win to that bettor. William Hill will have suffered an overall seven-figure loss on an awards market that typically doesn't attract this kind of money. And Chris, I'm not going to lie, based on what we saw from Shohei, I feel pretty good about this dude's chances.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm just wondering if William Hill Caesars Sportsbook is holding up the announcement on the American League MVP. Because I think we got the National League MVP.
Oh.
We got the NL Cy Young. We got the AL Cy Young. What are we waiting on?
Oh, Chris, this just in. Shohei Ohtani wins unanimously.
Hello, but he ain't the only one that wins. That better that place that bet. He's going to get that 900 grand. Let's go.
Call the pit boss. I just hit the jackpot.
We got money on the way. Let's go. The house doesn't always win, Mike. The house doesn't always win.
You absolutely love to see it. Hide the money, y'all. There's poor people around. This man is a winner, but he's not the only winner. Corey Aldemer wins the 2021 World Series of Poker main event with an $8 million prize. He beat American George Holmes at the final table in the No Limit Hold'em World Championships. He won on the 223rd hand with a pair of 10s and 7s, beating a pair of kings here. Don't worry, the runner-up takes home $4.3 million. Chris, I don't know what any of that means. I play blackjack when I go to the casino, but I wish this man well.
No, I love playing Texas Hold'em, and the one thing I will say is when he was looking at that hand with a pair of 10s and 7s, did he think that was a hand that was going to win him $8 million? Like, that's the crazy part about it. You never really know, but poker is as much about playing your hand as it is playing against the people that are across the table from you. So good on that guy for being able to come up with the winning hand and then ultimately being able to win the tournament in $8 million. My goodness.
That's a lot of that good, stinky cheese. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. When I say the boy has his own money, I mean the boy has got his own money. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. All right, this is where things get weird, of course. So I saw this story tweeted at me a lot today. In China, a man was banned from all-you-can-eat barbecue spot for eating too much. This man, a Chinese food live streamer known only as Mr. Kang, told Hunan TV that he was banned from the Hondadi Seafood Barbecue Buffet after a series of binges. He ate 1.5 kilos of pork trotters during his first visit and 3.5 to 4 kilograms of prawns on another visit. He said the restaurant is, quote, discriminatory against people who can eat a lot. He said, quote, Chris, I can eat a lot. Is that a fault? Adding that he did not waste any food.
Well, you know we're a big man show, so of course you can eat a lot is not a fault. That's a virtue. Like that is an attribute that you want to have. So, yeah, I don't think he did anything wrong in this one. And what I would do is look at the establishment and just say, what are we doing? If it's going to be all you can eat, then it should be all you can eat, including somebody that can eat a whole hell of a lot. As a former lineman in the NFL, I feel a way about this guy not having the opportunity to really put that all you can eat to the test and being able to exercise his right to take that buffet to task. So, yeah, I got a problem with that. I don't like it. A little bit curious as to a barbecue and a seafood spot. You wouldn't necessarily think that those two things would go together, but that's a sidebar in this entire conversation. Yeah, they're doing my man, Mr. Kang wrong. That ain't right what they're doing over there.
So, and I'm guessing he's some sort of competitive eater on this stream. He's got more than 250 million views on Weibo, which is a large, almost YouTube-like entity over there. They said he could drink 20 to 30 bottles of soy milk, which I didn't know was a thing that anyone really wanted to do in all of this. This, Chris, is a classic example of getting Titans eat freed. Remember the Titans. Titans
yes.
Eat free until things go awry here. It's a reminder that we talked about. The house always wins. There are opportunities for you as a larger person, you out there, to make sure that when you go to the buffet, the house does not always win. Everyone out there, keep fighting the good fight. Stick around here next on ESPN Radio. Again, Packers wide receiver Alan Lazard will join Spain and Fitz coming up tonight at 8 p.m. right here on ESPN Radio.